Well, this hour, we'll take your phone calls with Lauren Weinstein as we talk about virtual reality, dark web, 5G, artificial intelligence, your robocalls. And if you happen to work for one of these robocall companies, check in with us. Tell us what you guys talk about every day. Love to hear it when we come right back. And welcome back to Coast, Lauren Weinstein with us as we talk about technology. I happen to like technology, Lauren, even though I think it could be abused. It is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and of course, it's not only been critical to civilization, right, all the way from the very beginning, but the speed with which we're dealing with it now is astounding. And even when you've spent your career working with it, as I have, in different ways and in different venues, I don't consider myself qualified to try to predict with any accuracy where it's gonna go. I saw the beginning of the internet and the ARPANET, and I did not anticipate that at this point we would be doing what we do with it now.
It's amazing.
It was, 2020 hindsight's always great, when you try to look at these things. But it's often going to be what seem like the least likely things that turn out to be the really gangbuster applications for new technology, which suggests that you really do want to invest broadly in technology, in research, not just looking for short-term gains, which unfortunately is kind of what happens now. It's not like the old days with AT&T and the original Bell Labs, where they did research that might take years and years and never make them a dime, but they still ended up with marvels like the transistor, little things like that completely changed the world. There's a long list of them. Unfortunately, now there's a lot of tendency just to say, well, if this can't make us money in a year or in 2 years, just forget it. And I think that's really sad and probably dangerous, too.
Do you think they have virtual reality where you could become an astronaut in a spaceship going to, let's say, the moon, and it's just like you're doing
it? Those exist already.
Oh, wow.
Those exist.
I wouldn't mind doing that.
Yeah, they've got ones that are trips around the solar system. I think I saw one in the listings for the Quest when I was looking at that. That is an Apollo one that's tied to the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11, which looks pretty cool. 50 years? Can you believe that?
I know. Coming up, July 20th.
Yeah. So there are a tremendous range of educational possibilities here, and the ones that exist now are incredible. What are people going to do with it in 10 years and 20 years and things? One of the first things I did with VR on an early system, it was like Google's early cardboard, cardboard with a couple of lenses, very crude, but it gave you a taste. I went to see Stonehenge with that, where I've never been.
Cool.
And the first thing that hit me, I said, those are much bigger than I thought, when you're standing there in the middle of them.
Yeah.
And I said,
looking up.
I've seen them on screens, on videos and movies my entire life. It never really hit me until I was looking at it, in a virtual reality sense and was standing right there with it.
Wow. Now, artificial intelligence, exactly how does that differ from VR?
Well, artificial intelligence is, virtual reality is creating an artificial environment to make you think you're somewhere you're not. Artificial intelligence is, in the broadest sense, machine learning and the use of artificial systems to solve problems, to think, if you want to put think in quotation marks, because, what does thinking really mean? We don't really know, even from the standpoint of biology. You can look at it from the standpoint of things that happen every day when you if you go to a website, some websites now, and you do searchings and things, there is artificial intelligence systems behind there that are attempting to find the right responses and the best responses. And you can go all the way to the other end of the spectrum, and you can look at the science fiction representations of artificial intelligence that, of course, are what cause a lot of people to be scared of AI. Personally, I am not scared of AI. I mean, there are some people, famous rich people, in fact, who have said, oh, AI is going to destroy humanity. They're taking the Terminator view of things. I sort of take a different point of view. I mean, my view is that, look, it's unlikely that AI even advanced way past what we're dealing with now. We're in the infancy now with little tiny baby steps. it's probably going to be thinking in a different way than we do. And there's no good reason to assume that it's going to be an evil force or a negative
force. All depends on who's on the other end of it.
Well, who's programming it and what kind of data is going into it. I mean, the old adage, garbage in, garbage out, still applies.
That sure does.
Even with these systems. And there are legitimate privacy concerns with data. Now, one of the things that's happened that's pretty cool, and this is an example of what probably no one could have anticipated. There's a technique over the last few years developed. Google works on it, other companies too, called federated learning. And what it does is it allows people to use their phones to do essentially a lot of the number crunching involved in AI without privacy-related information being sent to a central server that might concern people and might have negative privacy implications.
Interesting.
In other words, only the results go to the central servers. All the privacy-sensitive data stays on the person's phone, on their device. To think that you would be doing artificial intelligence on your phone
unbelievable.
is something that... Yeah. 10 years ago, I don't think very many people would have anticipated, or that even the power of those phones, the computational complexity and capabilities of the phone is such now that you could do something like that is staggering. And again, it kind of puts me back in that same place where I'm going, well, what's this going to be like in 10 years or 20 years? The question is, do we harness these technological forces and technological miracles, right? If you want to use the word, are we going to do good with them, or are we going to do bad things with them? They're really not making those decisions. We are, and so that's our choice. We can leverage these technologies to do good for the world and for people. Or we can kind of just be lackadaisical about it, and I'm sure there will be people out there who would be perfectly happy to use them against us.
Do you think AI will ever get to the point where, as some people claim, destroy humanity?
I don't think so. I think it's going to take people to destroy humanity. I think we're pretty well capable of that right now, right? I mean, you know, we're probably at any given time 10 minutes away from being, you know, technically being destroyed if somebody in the right place decided to...
At the right place, wrong time.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to be the problem. I worry a lot more about, just stupid people. Doing stupid things and evil things.
Although that's very possible.
And I don't think that the machines are going to be the problem. Now, one interesting question that comes up with AI is consciousness, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, could AI ever be conscious? And you start by saying we're nowhere near, you know, the level of complexity for that. But that's actually a very, very interesting question. If you take the point of view that there are religious or metaphysical aspects to consciousness, then your answer would presumably be no. If you don't feel that there are religious and metaphysical aspects to consciousness, then there's probably no good reason to assume that you couldn't have a conscious artificial intelligence. You have of sufficient complexity, you know, of complexity that approximates that of the brain, for example. I don't see why that couldn't happen given that set of beliefs or conditions. I don't think you could ever prove it, though. How do you prove that a computer or artificial intelligence system is actually conscious? How do you prove that the person in the room with you is actually conscious?
That's right.
You really can't. The only consciousness that you can demonstrate is only to yourself.
Yep. Let's take some calls for you, Lauren. They're lining up here. We've got Sebastian driving in California, first-time caller for him. Hi, Sebastian.
Hi there, guys.
Hi.
Hi. So, long-time listener, just cruising down from San Francisco down back to San Diego, driving on the coast, actually, 101. So
drive carefully. Thanks.
Listen to some coast-to-coast. And my question was about what your thoughts were on, like, this blockchain that's coming out. Bitcoin's hosted on it, and apparently the blockchain's going to be able to disrupt, I guess in a good way, a lot of different industries and how it works from like peer to peer. I don't know if you guys had any thoughts on that.
Okay. I am not a fan of blockchain. I am not a fan of Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies.
How come?
Well, first off, cryptocurrencies, as we have seen, are extremely volatile.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And we're not just talking Bitcoin here, though that's the obvious example. Extreme volatility, and I think logically part of the reason for that is because it's not, there's not only no physical representation, but there's no regulatory control really either. And we have seen some enormous problems in these cryptocurrency systems where people will rob the exchanges blind. You know, one day you'll hear $400 million worth of Bitcoins vanished overnight because there was a flaw somewhere in somebody's server and someone got hold of it. I'm not, you know, unless I would take the view that the only money that, this is my personal view, the only money that you should put into cryptocurrencies is money that you wouldn't be upset about having vanish overnight. Now, there's non-currency applications for blockchain, and you will often hear companies say, oh, yeah, we're going to be using blockchain to do this and blockchain to do that, and, wow, this is going to be a tremendous innovation. I have yet to see an application that's being touted for blockchain use that couldn't be just as well done in a much more understandable way using existing technology. That's not to say that there won't be applications where blockchain could be perfect, that could happen, but to date, my feeling is that there's a lot more hype than substance to all of this.
Good point. Let's go to Joe in the Bronx. Welcome to the program, Joseph. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Happy belated birthday.
Thank you, Joe.
And Lauren.
Yeah.
How are you? I wanted to ask if you can foresee virtual reality someday being able to read our minds and produce the fantasy that we're thinking of in front of us.
We are talking not the immediate future, right? We're talking long term here.
But it could happen.
Yeah, I would not discount the possibility, and the reason is this is one of those cases where you're seeing seminal developments, early developments in areas that kind of point in that direction. Some of the work that's being done now in neurobiology in reading signals from the brain, it's crude, it's very early, but and I'm reluctant to call it reading the mind, but in some ways it actually is. Enough is being learned about the electrical structure of the brain and these mechanisms to start to really understand, at least in broad terms, what someone is thinking about. And in the case of constrained sets, where there's been the training and such, even much more specificity of what people are thinking about. So if you have the time to develop this and you're looking in the future, I would not want to say that you could not have the ability to know what somebody is thinking to some degree of specificity. Now, of course, that has all kinds of implications for society, right? I mean, if you can hook up something to someone's head and know what they're thinking, everything changes in some good ways and in some bad ways. So if you can do that, and you have virtual reality, and you have an AI system that can, weave it together, I think that in some period of time it is a possibility. But this isn't going to be tomorrow, though I'm not going to say, I'm not going to say 100 years, and I'm not going to say 50 years, because things happen awful fast sometimes.
They sure do.
You're not expecting.
And they're beyond anything sometimes we can anticipate.
These predictions, trying to make time predictions on things like this is a fool's errand, really. But I think it's a possibility. It might not happen, but I don't see anything that says impossible based on the developments that we've seen to date.
Whoever came up with Dick Tracy knew about high technology of the future.
Yeah, we had the wrist radio was way ahead of its time. It's really kind of interesting when you look at science fiction. There were often blind spots. You had worlds where there was interstellar travel, but nobody had cell phones, right? They were still, going somewhere to make a call. People really did predict the internet in the way that it has come to be. Even brilliant writers like Isaac Asimov, he had what he wrote his robot stories. He had robots that were capable of understanding human speech, but still couldn't actually talk.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the earlier ones. And he had a view of his, a multivac, which was his giant computer, that was still communicating with basically punch cards.
His three robotic rules were pretty cool, though.
Oh, yeah. And in fact, roboticists actually use them. I mean, those are still,
A robot will not turn on its master.
A robot may not injure a
human.
A human being. A robot must obey orders given it to a human unless that conflicts with the previous one,
mm-hmm.
and a robot must protect its own existence unless that conflicts with
earlier, too.
Sounds like good rules to me.
Mike in Gates, North Carolina. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Hey, George, how's it going?
Okay, Mike, thanks.
George?
Go ahead, sir.
Hey, how you doing tonight, bro?
Good.
Lauren, how you doing?
Very good. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. At the beginning of the show, y'all were mentioning the 5G and everything. You know, I live in Gates, North Carolina, which is a rural area. And, I mean, we didn't even get DSL until 2004 or 5.
Jeez.
Yeah.
And we were using dial-up. And then cable, we weren't able to get cable internet in our area until 4 years ago, and it's only available in certain spots of the county.
Yeah.
You'll be late for 5G, but it's no big deal because whatever he's using now probably works well.
Does it?
I don't know. You tell me.
Is he still there? Yeah. Unfortunately, the rural areas have been shortchanged at every step of the way when it comes to these technological deployments. And
that's because of the size of the population. They want the biggest buyers.
Yeah, well, in some in much of the world, the government mandates that there's going to be even-handed distribution of these systems. They say it will be. We have a national system, but it's going to happen. Here it's all been under the control of private corporations. The FCC does have, and I think just in the last few days there's been word of broadband, rural broadband initiatives and things. But generally the decisions have been largely made by the large dominant carriers, and they are making bottom line decisions.
And they always will. Lauren, we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Nick Pope joins us with some incredible UFO stories and information, so make sure you're part of the program, and we're going to come back in a moment with Lauren Weinstein and take final phone calls as we talk about high technology. And welcome back to Coast, our final segment with Lauren Weinstein as we talk about high technology. Let's go to Thomas in La Jolla, California. Tom, go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Yes, I agree with you. Dick Tracy was way ahead of his time.
I sure was.
Yeah. And Lauren, thank you for everything you do. It's a pleasure to hear your interviews. Lauren, there are, for our desktops and laptops, there are four operating systems. Microsoft has Windows, Apple has Mac OS, Google Alphabet has Chrome OS, and then there is open source Linux. And I was wondering if you had any personal recommendations in terms of obtaining an operating system that is absolutely secure against internet criminality, malware, and also against the no privacy of the internet. Do you have any recommendations personally?
Unfortunately, you used the word absolute, I believe, in there. and there is no absolute security for any of these operating systems, and they all have their pluses and minuses. Part of the way they bring security to those systems sort of depends on your willingness to stay within their ecosystems. In other words, if you're using an Apple operating system and you mainly deal with Apple, you're using Google, you're using Android or Chrome, and you use the Play Store to get the apps where they're scanned for malware, similar for Microsoft. Linux is a different kind of thing because, as you said, it is open source. If you know what you're doing, if you're willing to spend the time to really understand it, Linux has a lot to recommend it. I'm sitting here right now in front of a Linux desktop, but I would not necessarily suggest that people who don't have the time to really learn the details of these systems necessarily use a Linux desktop. At one time, there were hopes that it would become a real competitor for Windows, for example. That really hasn't happened because, in a way, the pluses of open source with all the varying packages and varying approaches to doing things can be a detriment in some ways if someone doesn't have enough technical skill or the time even to dig through all of that. So among the operating systems you listed, I would not say that any one is better than any other in terms of absolute security, absolute privacy. They all have pluses and minuses. And it's really, like I said, more of a matter of, where do you want to lay your stake in this? Which one do you want to kind of devote yourself to? If you have all of your information with one or the other, you could usually take advantage of the various mechanisms they have for privacy and for security. But that decision is going to be very personal, and it's going to be based on a lot of factors, including what kind of hardware you can afford, what kind of applications you mostly use your computer for, all of that. So unfortunately, I can't give any reasonable overriding answer to that question. I wish I could.
Lauren, do you think Steven Jobs, when he and Wozniak invented the personal computer, saw where we'd be today?
Steven was certainly a visionary. I don't think he could see, and Apple has not been the same since he's been gone.
And what's driving Apple? The phone as opposed to the computer now?
I think Apple is moving pretty quickly into a service model. All of these companies now are basically moving toward less emphasis on hardware per se, and more on service subscription models where mm-hmm. your people are paying you every month for something
rather
than have one-time purchases.
Yeah,
but certainly Steven was visionary. I don't necessarily think he could have seen all the details, but it's kind of remarkable when you think it's not that many years since he stood there on a stage and showed the very first iPhone, and there's no denying the fact that was a revolutionary product from which a tremendous amount has evolved in a heartbeat by most standards. Could he have imagined that a smartphone would be running artificial intelligence software? Maybe not, but he certainly was ahead of his times in many ways, and the industry owes him a very large debt.
Sure does. Let's go to someone called Anonymous. Hello there.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, George. Hi, Lauren. Hi. I'm calling Anonymous from Anonymous tonight. The reason why I've debated on doing this is because I've heard you with Lauren before, and I debated on whether to call, but I feel that I want to ask Lauren some questions, and I want to tell you what happened. And maybe he knows, and if nothing else, maybe people that are listening out there will know what is going on and what has gone on and can protect themselves. I just need to start from the beginning. This happened at least nine years ago. My brother received a call, and they started out normal and everything, and they found out what my brother's name was. and all this. And then he receives another call, and they are saying all kinds of obscenities to him, and we're going to go down there, and we're going to beat you and all this. My brother is talking large crap back to him, you know, and he said, well, you come on, you know, and all this. And he was quoting lines. My brother was quoting lines from Clint Eastwood movies, you know, I'll kill you, I'll get your dog, and all this stuff. Okay, here's what happened. And this happened 9 years ago. Yet no things like this could happen. Might be people out there right now that don't know things like this can happen, that this is what happened. All right, what they did, they recorded his whole conversation. Then what they would do, they would target the road that my brother lived on. Now, my brother lived out the country, and it's a long country road, and there's people he's got. There's several people that live down that road, but he really doesn't know them because he's like a quarter of a mile from each one. What they would do, they called the people, some other people that lived on his road. And what these people can do, they record whatever you say. Then they can go back and pick out parts of the words of your conversation.
And edit
them. In your voice. And play it back and make their own sentences with it, if you get what I'm saying.
If they have enough recording, sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what they did.
Why?
They called back to the neighbors that lived down from my brother and had him threatening them and everything in the voice that he used to them. Okay, the whole time my brother doesn't know any of this crap's going on. All he knows is he got this wacky call from someone that was, you know, and he just talked crap back to him.
Okay, I'm going to have to stop you. Your language is out of control. But I don't know where she was going with that, Laura.
Well, it's kind of interesting. The I can't really address, you know, that specific story, but the underlying concept there of taking something real and shuffling it around into something that looks different is actually a very a big issue right now. The term that's usually used is deep fakes. And the technology that's available now is such that with a very short, relatively short amount of a recording of someone, for example, it is possible to synthesize an extremely persuasive rendition of them saying something completely different. That has actually now moved.
That does happen.
The whole issue of deep fakes and how to detect them. I think I saw a story within the last couple of days about a research group that was saying they had an AI based system in this case that was so convincing that it would be, you know, that you needed another AI based system to detect that the original one wasn't what it.
Yeah, if you have enough words, you could probably juxtapose it to any way you want it.
You don't even have to, and you actually resynthesize it completely. It's not like just taking words and sticking them, you know, and splicing them together. It resynthesizes them to be very convincing. But beyond that, the real concern that goes with this with deep fakes is it can be done with video too, and
not as easy.
It's not as easy, but the technology exists. This is not something that's future. This exists now. I have seen examples that are very, very convincing. They're not perfect. If you know what to look for, you can see the issues. But imagine the implications of being able to take a political figure and, you know, release a video that shows them saying things and doing things that they never did.
Well, they just did that, I think.
It'd be completely completely synthesized from scratch. It would be,
or put them in a location they never were in.
All that science fiction is coming around. There was a movie way back called Looker that sort of explored that, where they were actually building synthetic versions of people, you know, for video, based on models, and people would say things and do things in those videos that they never actually did. At that time, that seemed completely impossible. But anyone who's interested in that should look at should look up deep fakes. This is a major area of research and concern right now, especially when you tie it in with all the other concerns about fake news, detecting fake news. How much damage could you do with a fake video that makes it look like somebody is saying something completely outrageous that they never actually said? And you can find demonstrations of that that are absolutely going to make you say, wow, what are we going to do about this? Because that it could undermine, obviously there have always been, from the very beginning of photography, there were ways to fake photography and to do special effects.
Yeah,
and all
with
of that.
A little Photoshop, but now it's amazing.
Yeah. Now the technology is getting to the point, though, where it won't take special skills to be able to do this. It will be pretty much a script-based one-two-three-step kind of thing.
Just what we need, Lord, when we're getting close to UFO information, and now they have this kind of technology to fake things.
Yeah, and so I think it's going to be, as I said, they're now saying, well, you're going to need another one of these systems to detect the other one. Humans won't be able to do it. So I guess we're going to have an arms race in deep fakes now. Just what we need.
Joe in Long Island, New York. Go ahead, Joseph.
Hi, Lauren. On the virtual reality, you were talking about astronauts. Say you were doing that. Could you bring a friend on your virtual reality trip? Or if you want a partial experience, like say I would maybe want to climb about 15,000 feet on Mount Everest and maybe virtual reality the rest of it.
Much of that exists now and is rapidly developing, climbing towers, climbing mountains, and a lot of them now, a lot of these Quest applications I was talking about for the Quest have social aspects to them. It can be as simple in a way that I think, what's it called? There's an application called Big Screen, which basically you're in a virtual movie theater, and you invite your friends in, and they all have avatars that represent them, and you sit there and you watch the movie that you've selected, and you can talk to each other, and I guess you have virtual popcorn, and the whole thing, just like you were watching the movie. They have virtual dance halls, and of course you get into all these issues, like if you have strangers who are meeting in virtual environments, how do you deal with harassment, for example? And that's actually been worked out. There's motions for people to make if they're being harassed, and then the harasser gets teleported to another room. All of these things that we've been thinking about for a long time in science fiction are now starting to come in for VR. And boy, I don't know where it's going to end up, but it's really a fascinating area. It's advanced much faster than I had anticipated, and so it's going to be really, really interesting to watch.
Would you call it exciting too?
Yeah, I would. I was because it was so expensive and so complicated, I just had kind of stayed away from it for a very long time. And it's only now when it's reached this kind of price point for people where you can say, well, now we can really start thinking about this. It's not just hardcore gamers who are spending their life savings for these PCs. I expect the development to be very, very fast. But like we were saying early on, anyone who's interested in this, they really have to try it. You just go to a store and they'll have a demo.
They just try it out.
Yeah, because it is not what you expect. It's completely different.
It literally puts you in the picture.
Absolutely, literally.
All right, Lauren, keep in touch, and we'll continue listening to you on our news clips as well, okay?
Thank you, sir. Always a pleasure, and my thanks to the entire crew and the audience.
Up next, Nick Pope joins us as we talk about the latest bombshell developments in the field of ufology, just ahead on Coast to Coast AM.